welcome to Stand By with JJ and Francisco. I would be the JJ part of that title.
And I'm Francisco Ramos. And we're both international comics, right?
Indeed we are. And we know a lot of artists from around the world. So we thought we'd bring you guys this project. And we're looking forward to introducing you to things and answering some of the burning questions that you have.
Yes. And because this is our first official podcast, we're going to talk about first. We're going to talk about our first coming to America, our first gigs, and our first bombs.
Sounds like a good deal to me. Here we go. Episode one.
Bailalo.
Episode number one. This is, yeah,
We did it.
I'm excited about this.
We did it.
We made it to the couch together.
Yes, the couch.
We didn't.
This is our Tonight Show couch.
Well, our set decorator isn't quite Tonight Show level, but yeah. we're doing what we can.
But it's tonight. We're doing a show tonight in the couch.
So. Yeah, it counts enough.
So it counts. Yeah.
We're really looking forward to seeing how we can grow. This little experiment that we're doing, we're going to have a lot of fun, you know?
Yeah, man, it's going to be fun. And we're looking forward to also then having guests, you know?
Yeah.
We're going to ask them the same questions that we're going to ask each other, right?
Well, this being the first episode, I think that's our deal, is that we'll get to know each other. But the deal for you guys at home is, of course, you know, we're stand-up comedians and we got a lot of friends. And we thought if we started a podcast, we thought maybe we'll start by getting friends on who can, maybe our unique selling point would be addressing some of the questions that we get after shows.
Yes.
Because some of the very, very popular questions we get after shows are, how did you get into this? You know, how do you start? Where did you move from? Where are you from?
Mexico.
Are you Mexican?
That's the one I get a lot.
Are you Mexican?
Which I'm not, by the way. I'm not. I just want to, but that's, because they probably don't know. But yeah, I'm not.
Yeah.
Which... I'm fine if I am.
There's nothing wrong with me.
This is the Seinfeld episode, right?
But I'm not. So I hope you guys look forward to that because we're international comics. I mean, I've only been a resident in America for 5 years.
I was born here. No, I'm kidding.
You're just putting it on.
I'm also an immigrant, as you can hear by my accent.
Yeah, which brings us to the questions. Like when we get to the point where we have guests, we're going to have some international guests and stuff, and we can ask them all those questions about their career and the choices they made. That's why we called it standby as well.
Yes.
We're often flying standby to different cities, you know, to entertain. So we that was that very good boop boop.
Do you want that? I think everybody knows that. Like you're about to take off, or
that's exactly what it is, man. and that's why I'm really looking forward to this episode because it gives me an opportunity to get to know you more.
Yeah.
Because the two of us going forward, when we do have guests on, we're going to want to ask them these kind of questions, and I'll get to know things about you that I don't know yet, actually. Because when I moved here to Hollywood 5 years ago, you were here, as far as I was concerned. you were already established.
Yeah.
So I actually didn't, the arrogance of me, I didn't think of where you came from or anything like that. I just thought
how can I get on stage?
Yeah.
How can I use this guy?
How can I get on stage? how quickly can I climb through the ranks here? And I thought, you know, this good Hollywood boy. So I'm really looking forward to learning this about you because, of course, you're originally from Venezuela.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, like and I know that you moved here when you were young as an immigrant, but that's the extent of my knowledge. So I'm dying.
That's it. That's all I know.
Exactly how those first steps came for you, man.
No, well, thank you for inquiring. I was born in Venezuela and I moved to the US when I was 12.
Right. By choice.
Yes, by choice. I was 12 and I was like, you know what, mom and dad, I'm getting the fuck out of here.
Right.
I want to live by myself.
You're rocked up. I don't care if you put me in a cage. I'll sit in a cage for a good couple of years until you let me in. You were with your mom.
It was like
right?
Madagascar, you know what I mean? Like I was like the... we moved. It's always funny because we both was like, it wasn't by choice. It was my parents. They're like, well, my mom got a job at the Pan American Health Organization. Right. Which is part of the World Health Organization.
And they were based in Washington, in D.C., right? In Washington, D.C.
Yes.
Right.
So that's where we moved. Moved there in 94. That's when I moved.
Wow, right on.
Like, which was funny because when we moved, that's when...
right when the Blue Jays were winning World Series.
Oh, right. That's right. Yeah.
Joe, America didn't even own baseball then.
Carter.
Joe Carter.
Joe Carter, man. Yeah. I remember watching that. And Venezuela, that's, actually.
Yeah. The only hope of a Canadian nation. That was it.
Yeah, but what's funny, too, it's like 94. It was OJ was going on, which...
Oh, wow.
What's, I didn't... My thing is, like, I remember watching that thing with OJ, and, like, I remember... And I was going, like, wait... Why are they chasing the guy from Naked Gun?
Yeah, because
I had no idea that OJ was actually a football player, like a famous football player. I had no idea. I was like, yeah. I just remember watching Naked Gun with my dad, and I was like, that's a nice guy.
Yeah.
Why are they chasing him?
That's no doubt. That's like the quarterback who's doing all those insurance commercials now. What's his face? What's his... From the Broncos or whatever.
Oh, no, John Elway? Not John Elway. Peyton Manning.
Peyton Manning. That's it. Yeah. Thank you, Brian, our fantastic producer.
Yeah, that's like if Peyton just goes nuts and starts killing his wife.
Well, that too. But Peyton doing so many commercials now, I'm not surprised that there's going to be people now who just think he's a spokesperson.
That's true. For those commercials, well, because you're young, you're 12 year old, you don't remember Peyton playing football. Now you see him supporting Papa John.
Yeah, in Ty. So you move here, you've got OJ. Like, that's a huge moment, even for me. Like, I remember OJ.
You remember OJ?
I remember where I was and everything.
Well, you grew up with knowing OJ as a football player.
I did, yes. Okay. You know, yeah. I mean, he was pretty low. Like, I grew up in Canada, so hockey players. It goes hockey players, then Toronto Blue Jays players, and then OJ was somewhere down here. But he vaulted up into the attention spectrum.
Of course.
Well, that must have been... I can't even imagine... Because growing up in Canada, I'm pretty close to American culture. I assume I'm close to
American
culture.
It's like us, like in Venezuela, like growing up with Mexican culture. Like, because Mexico is kind of like... Whatever happened in Mexico kind of grows into Latin America. Like, there was this... I remember there's this big... It's called El Chavo del Ocho, which like everybody in Latin America grew up with. So it's kind of like, so like you were saying, it's like in we, like with Canada and US, you know a lot about the US because you're together and it's like kind of like same language and everything.
Same television. I grew up with basically with, I was going to say Boston Red Sox or whatever, but that part of America.
Busta Rhymes?
I grew up with Busta Rhymes as well. But yes, we had the East Coast. New England television was what.
Oh, so you had it actually.
What we got in Nova Scotia, I go like that. But yeah, Nova Scotia. You know, you go to Maine and you turn right, and that's how you found my little.
That's how you go to your house. Just go to Maine and turn right.
It always cracked me up. I loved it because that's the way my dad used to explain to people where. Really? Nobody knows where Nova Scotia is. Right.
It is actually next to Maine.
It is. See. Wow. You see what's happening?
It's actually but it's part of Canada.
Yeah, it's Canada. Yeah.
But it's like a little island.
No, it's a part peninsula.
Okay.
But its Maine is right there, if you see it on the map. It's literally dangling off the side.
Got it.
Yeah, like Maine's as far north as you can go in America.
Yeah.
You know, then you go through the woods of Maine, you know, through Stephen King's territory.
Ah.
Because, you know, it's all the creepy hotels and all that kind of stuff.
That's
the
true.
Algonquin Hotel.
Yeah.
And then when you come through the woods, you'll end up in Nova Scotia.
So all the killers go to Nova Scotia. From Stephen King's novel.
I reckon if they're not in Alaska... they're hiding out somewhere north up there.
Yeah. But yeah, so I came here in 94 and then, and yeah, man, just moving here was just like, we moved, we didn't know English at all. I had to learn English on my own. My mom, being a Latin Catholic woman, put me in a private school so I could keep the whole Catholic school thing.
Okay.
But it was a very small private school. So it was only like basically one teacher per grade. And the teacher didn't, you know, she did as much as she could to try to teach me English, but, like, she had to teach a class.
So, right.
Like, I basically just sat in the back.
And you were the only one.
I was the only one.
I imagine, too, because being Latino, like, you don't often make it all the way to Washington.
That's true.
If you're coming through the border to America, most of the families would settle in.
Well, I mean, I didn't go through, like, like horse, you know. I think
you flew into Washington D.C. and mom had a proper job.
Yes, we had a visa, we had a passport. You know, it was very we did it the legal way. You know?
Oh yeah, when I mentioned him staying in a cage, I was just joking.
But what's funny is like there's actually a lot of Latinos in D.C. because of all the embassies and all the international organizations. Of course, yeah. So like. It's not like it's actually like a whole variety of Latinos. It's not just one. It's not like in Miami, there's like mostly Cubans, or in Cali, California, it's a lot of mostly Mexicans. Yeah. In DC, it's like a very melting pot of like different types
of
Latinos.
It's almost like a collection of individuals.
Yes.
Who knew?
Because interesting, like as the elections didn't realize, Latinos. It's not just one type of Latino. There's a lot of them.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of them that are very conservative and love. And
I know. Some people are screaming, like, who's the Latino for Trump? And, like, guess what? There are some others.
Yes.
They're not being paid.
But,
they're not going to get paid. So
I got there. I mean, and started, like, I had to learn English, like I said, by myself. And it was tough because, you know, as a kid, you're, like, going to a school.
I can only
You know
imagine
what I mean?
That.
You can like that. Just going to a new school is already fucked up. And then now not knowing the English. I mean, like, I remember a kid called me, somebody was racist to me and I didn't know they were racist to me because I didn't know English. They called me a spick. And I thought he meant speak. And I'm going like, no, speak. And the guy's like,
so you
what
kept
the?
Speaking.
Yeah.
And he's like,
and he's like, no, you're an idiot. Speak. And I'm like, no, speak.
Yeah.
So I actually beat racism.
You did.
With ignorance.
No, that wasn't ignorance. That was lack of knowledge, really.
Lack of knowledge. Yeah, but ignorance is bliss, man.
Yeah, man.
So, and then finally, I learned English. Well, actually, I want to talk about this. It happened to me quickly, I think. I also, had to learn how to dress, too, because, I want to try for basketball.
Don't dress in Venezuela.
Because we don't dress. We're naked.
We're naked people.
A lot of nakedness around. No, but what's funny is I want to try for the basketball team, and my mom bought me some shorts to play for the basketball team.
Yeah,
and I try them on. I go into the basketball practice. My dad, before he drops me off, he goes like, Francisco, if you want to make the team, you have to be intimidating. So you look at each kid in the eye and you tell him, you want a piece of this? And I was like, all right, which I think he knew that I suck at basketball, and he's like, well, the only way he's gonna make the team if he acts crazy.
The other thing is that kids never know how to be intimidating, because even though that is a very important part of sports, it's like having this passion and this aggression, but no preteen ever knows how to find it.
Of course.
Because I can see it.
You're scared,
too. Because I was giving those lectures, too, when I was a kid. You know, I grew up hockey, baseball, basketball. I played all those sports. But I think before I had the passion or the anger in me to try to beat someone, which sometimes you don't have when you're a kid.
Yes, yeah.
And then my father would be like, be aggressive out there. To me, aggressive was just like, ah! You know, I hadn't learned how to be aggressive.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, it's hard to be, you know, as a kid, a 12-year-old, aggressive. You're a kid.
Yeah.
And then, I went in, I started walking into the court, and everybody just stare at me, you know, like in the movies. And they look at me because I wasn't wearing shorts. I was wearing boxers because my mom bought me boxers thinking they were... Because in Venezuela, boxers were never a thing. Everybody wore briefs.
Yeah.
I never grew up with boxers. I didn't know what boxers were. Yeah. So I'm walking in the court...
In your underwear.
going to each kid, going in... You want a piece of this? In my underwear. You know? And they're like, no, we don't want a piece of you fucking freak. That's actually pretty frightening. Right? Imagine that. And then obviously I didn't make the team. I had to... They're like, my dad is like, did you make the team? I was like, no, I just have to register as a sex offender. That's what happened.
Which it's too bad that that would be a useful tactic, actually. If every team should keep a position open
for
semi-naked crazy guy, and just have the other teams just.
I just imagine too, like how of a stereotypical foreign guy I was as walking naked in my underwear. Yeah. Imagine now I'm like, oh my God, even if you write that in a comedy, you're like, that's a little too much of a stretch. And I did it.
I know. Well, I can see that being true. That's...
But it was tough. I mean, and then finally learn English. And then I realized I had an accent, and then I was like, fuck, I'm an immigrant. So I realized, I wasn't never going to fit in. as a full U.S. citizen.
See, this is part of the fun of the podcast, I think, we're doing, because getting to know this, because I can already see the commonalities there. Like, because I grew up in the military.
Yeah.
And I find this moving around, right?
Yeah, because you had to move from base to base, setting, right?
Yeah, and that sounds like a little bit like what you had to do when you were a kid as well.
Yeah.
And it's, you develop this sense of humor as a defense mechanism.
Of course.
Basically, because everywhere you because even though I spoke the language, of course, in Canada, because in military, we would move from coast to coast.
So you went from like,
Yeah, I always say I'm from Nova Scotia, but I went to high school. I went to grade school and high school in BC.
And the
other coast.
The travelers, how long did you stay in each base?
We were about 3 or 4 years time.
So it wasn't
my father would get
crazy.
Posted. Yeah, and you know, it went with a good rhythm for me, like, because it was all 3 years of high school I got to do in British Columbia, and then moved back for, I did university in Nova Scotia. So we went back and forth, but I know these same defense mechanisms because
you're being in your underwear.
Basically,
that's a defense mechanism.
Well, basically, because moving to British Columbia in grade 10, I had Nova Scotia and
your
fashion.
Friends. Oh, your fashion.
No, I wasn't wearing boxers, but I do remember I had like some ill fitting like. Just clothing that nobody
wore over there.
We don't address a lot
What's
of the
difference?
Fashion. I think they were British Columbia is more trendy. I found myself in a more trendy place, like Vancouver Island. The base, the Air Force base, is in Victoria on Vancouver Island.
I went there,
and it's just they're
more cool.
They're a little, it would be the 90210 of Canada, basically,
So you're like the country boy.
I was definitely bullied a lot when I first showed up.
Really?
Yes, like, it was hard. Grade 10 was hard for me, and because I had left Nova Scotia.
Like beating you up? Did they beat you up?
Yeah, I got in a fight first week, I got in a fight at the Power Field. I got in a fight with some guy.
Wait, at the Power Field?
It was called our high school fighting field was called the Power Field.
They had a fighting field?
Well, it was a power grid. Like, it was a power grid as well. So.
Like, I imagined you, like, the principal, like, giving you the tour of the school. He's like, well, this is the soccer field. This is the power field where all the fights happen. Like, what?
And it turns out, Mr. Whitehead, you've been booked for one. You'll be expected there at 3 o'clock today.
And your dad's like, be aggressive. I don't want to be aggressive.
I know. Ah! I was just out there with my ill-fitting Nova Scotian clothes.
So did they beat you up or did you beat them up?
I definitely got a little bit beat up. It was all right. I'll call it a victory in retrospect, but it wasn't even my doing. But I was the new kid at school, and I think a girl liked me or something, and then some guys got their backs up. And
it is 90210. It's like so much drama.
Yeah, they went a bit 90210 on me and stuff.
Was Drake in you?
Drake, yeah. Well, that's more central. That's more central Canada. More in the middle. But yes, that's. That's basically the gist of how, and I, you know what, I feel like a lot of military and a lot of people who get displaced or have to move around, I find a lot of them go into comedy or into the arts because we learn those little tricks of, to avoid the fight.
And also because we don't fit in. Yeah. We never fully fit in because we move so much. And I think it's like that, as a comic, I think that's kind of like the thing. You only fit in until you meet other comics. You're like, you're like me, you know, and it's kind of like, oh, I finally fit in. Like, that was what happened to me when I first started doing comedy.
I love that feeling.
Yeah, right?
Like, and we're getting that feeling very rarely right now because of the pandemic. You feel it when I get to a gig. We are comics, we're all like, we haven't seen each other in quarantine or anything like that. Yeah. And we're still trying to social distance. And And we're like, but we're so excited. We're like dogs off our leashes at the park. We're like, oh, yeah.
It is our office hours. You know what I mean? When we go in the clubs or whatever, or a comedy show and we see other comics.
Entirely. And then we could just unload all the energy and the stuff. And then, but speaking of the getting bully part, because that's what I was going to say about... I've always found it intimidating. Like, I wanted to do comedy all my life. I'm not sure.
Oh, really? And me,
definitely. I mean,
I never had that.
You probably hadn't seen it until you moved to America, right?
No. Well, I love that you, like, every time you, like, you tell me, like, I'm fucking come from, like from, like, the 1800s. It's like, have you ever seen electricity before? No.
Had you seen electricity? No, I imagine.
I moved when I was 12, so of course I was just jerking off to a wall, you know. Which, by the way, that's we could talk about that later on in the in another episode.
We'll save that for
our first jerk-offs, but that's how, if you want to follow us and come back to that one, because I can tell you a story about that. But I never knew about comedy or stand-up because I was a kid, and then
okay, turns out I was right.
But not because of cultural stuff, but like because over there there's a lot of funny shows like SNL. There was an SNL type show when I was growing up in Venezuela, all that stuff. Only thing that I had is that I liked making people laugh. You know, that was my only thing. It is true what you were saying. I never knew that was like a profession. Even when I was here, like until I finally realized I didn't want to do what I major in, that's when I realized, like, oh, actually, stand-up is like a profession. You can actually do this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's always a great revelation, isn't it? Because
yeah.
So, because I did grow up with it.
So you always wanted to be.
Always wanted to be it, but was terrified to tell anybody. I didn't want to share anybody, but I knew from like 10 years old or whatever.
Really?
But I didn't want to give that answer. Yeah, because my brother and I used to watch, like we were latchkey kids.
What's
my latchkey kids in North America, it means you always let yourself in after school and stuff. Because my mom worked and my father worked military. So,
yeah.
So we just had to be responsible kids. I was the oldest and we had to let ourselves in and stuff. But my brother and I, we loved watching. When we would get home from school, there was usually a run on CBC in Canada of about 2 hours of just comedy shows, you know, repeat.
But like stand-up or
stand-up. Yeah. There was a show called Comedy Club 54 that was just for laughs. I was aware of this and I was aware of the little bit of rebellion to it too. Cause of course my mom didn't want me, like when I watched Eddie Murphy, I got in huge trouble, you know? And I just remember thinking, this is what an amazing medium. It's so powerful and it makes me laugh, makes me happy.
Yeah.
And so it's what I wanted to do, but I knew it wasn't realistic. I knew you'd be ridiculous.
Yeah.
You said to your parents, I want to be a comedian.
Yeah.
No parents are going to. So
especially parents that didn't come from that culture of like artistic culture.
Well, yeah. And I think every parent wants you to pick a secure job, a secure avenue.
Well, I mean, I'm sure like Steven Spielberg's daughter is like, can I be a director? And he's like, yeah, sure. You're like, it becomes of course. You know, like, I think it.
Oh, yeah. You can get the opportunities that your parents afford you. Because I love, like, Ben Stiller's life. Like, Ben Stiller raised by people in
Jerry
theater.
Jerry Stiller.
And goes on, like, so in that case, yeah.
No, right? But that's what I think. It has to do a lot with, like, how your parents, you know, where they come from, how they were, you know, like, if they're just like, oh, you. Like my parents, for example, was very much about, you know, being a professional and going to college, you know, because that's how that was their thing because when they were young, nobody did that.
Yeah.
Now, when I grew up, I'm like, everybody did that. That's everybody goes to college. So it's like, what else? What else? You know?
Yeah.
So for me, it was more like a complete revelation of like, ooh, I majored in finance and international business. And I was like, and the last class that I took, I was like, wow, I hate this. And I needed to find them, like, and that's when I always say, like, I had like quarter life crisis. I was like, okay, what the fuck do I want to do? Because I was like, what do I want to do that's going to make me happy? Because I remember talking to my other friends and they were like, yeah, they had their, oh yeah, now we're going to do 2 years of this and then do my master's. And I remember going like, also I felt like crappy because it's like, you know what your life was going to be. Like, it was like very like, if I do this, and then you get married, and they get divorced, and then you do this, and then I was like,
I have a 5-year plan.
Yes, and I was like, I don't want that shit. I want to like not know what the fuck's gonna happen.
I know. I'm on about year 20 of my 5-year plan.
Yeah.
I always think it's taken a while, but yes, I totally feel that way too. Because I went to university as well. I took health professions.
Okay.
But I still love the idea of the stand-up comedy thing, but there wasn't comedy clubs in my city in Halifax. Halifax, Nova Scotia has only had a comedy club, I think, like probably less than 20 years now. But there was nothing on the East Coast, right? The Yuk Yuks is our national chain, and I think there used to be, And then, but there was this sweet spot, I would say, probably for 20 years where there was nothing in Halifax. So I felt that way in taking my health degree.
Yeah.
And I was intending to take my master's in Toronto with my real motivation being so that I could be in this city of Toronto and do stand-up at night. Yeah. That was another secret motivation I didn't want to tell my parents.
Yeah.
But I actually had a lovely twist of fate in a way because like you, I didn't enjoy my degree.
Mm-hmm.
And I finished it in South Carolina. I did work for Marriott for my last semester to do my dissertation. I was in Marriott running dolphin tours and stuff for...
Wait, what?
Yeah, I worked for Marriott Hotels.
On, you ran dolphins?
On Hilton Head Island. Yes, and I ran over dolphins. I just... It was just a rebellious... Wait,
you're the original Tiger King. You're the Dolphin King.
Well, basically, we did have some rough dolphins that looked like they were worse for wear. We had one guy called Chopper who had little chunks out of his face because he would always swim into the boats. He was always fast.
Oh, like a dolphin, not a guy.
Yeah, no, not a guy. Okay, I'm still talking about... I'm giving the dolphins all have personalities. But it, basically, working for Marriott in Hilton Head Island, finishing my degree, it did make me realize, like, I don't love... I should love this, and I don't love it as much.
Yeah.
There's also some restrictions to working for Marriott when you're going to... even though you're doing...
Don't fuck the dolphins.
You can't fuck the dolphins. You're not allowed to fuck the dolphins. But you also... You have to be clean cut, which I was never a fan of. And some of the other dolphin tours, they didn't have to be clean cut. So I do remember feeling like in my polo shirt and, you know, and trying to finish my degree with these people. And I remember looking at all the kind of the hippie, the outdoorsman types who were, they also ran dolphin tours and all that kind of stuff. And I remember feeling that they seemed to be having more fun with their lives. So that's what made me go decide that it wasn't for me and I needed a break.
Got it.
And at the point of taking my break, I decided to take it in Scotland. I went over to Scotland because being Canadian, you're given a young person's visa. You can get a young person's visa.
What's a young person's visa?
Basically, we're in the Commonwealth, right? So Britain, you know, we're part of the British Empire.
Canada is.
Yeah. Yeah, man. We got the Queen on our money.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. Brian, you knew that? Buddy.
There we go.
All right.
Yeah.
Not very well. Kind of.
And the Commonwealth, they do a deal with...
So they basically, you're still owned by England.
Yeah, if you want to put it that way. We're still...
They're still your bitch.
We're still... We don't feel very owned, but I'm sure the Queen could be a tiebreaker in something.
Okay.
But I'm not sure at what point she'd rock up and go... Yeah. I've changed my... You can't do that, Canada. but basically, we get this permission to go anywhere within the Commonwealth for a couple of years. So Australia, New Zealand, Canada. That's why we actually have a lot in common with each other because we actually have some British television, British influences.
Yeah.
Anyway, I decided that the Hilton Head Island recreational activities weren't for me. And I went to Edinburgh, and I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I didn't realize how healthy the British comedy world was.
Yeah.
I didn't, like, it was, like, I knew Eddie Izzard.
Yeah.
And I knew a bit of Billy Connolly. But when I arrived there, I just saw one of the healthiest circuits and everything. And so I was in Edinburgh, and there was a place called the Stand Comedy Club. And this is what I was going to say to you, too. Like, I found myself in the perfect position, even though I didn't go there to do stand-up comedy. I just went to try to lose myself for a summer in Europe. I was just doing that. You know,
did you play Eminem?
I could have found myself.
Did you play Eminem?
I reckon I did. I reckon I was shadow boxing through the streets, playing some Eminem, catching some attention. But that's how I feel like it fell into my lap because I've always...
That's cool.
Because having been bullied in those little situations or when you move to different places, here I was in Scotland now, staying at a hostel, having new friends.
Mm-hmm. You were accepted.
So I was accepted, but also I wasn't afraid to try stand-up in front of them.
Mm.
Because I would say other places, I would have been scared. I wouldn't have wanted to start in front of my university friends.
Yes.
I wouldn't have wanted to start in front of my high school friends.
Mm-hmm.
But here I was in Scotland. I had new friends of like a week. Or whatever. Not that they were expendable. They were great people, but I thought, you know what? I can try to do stand up in front of these people. And so that's how I was able to make the decision to give it a shot. Because I've heard other comics, especially here in America, I've heard quite a few stories of American comics who packed a room with their friends for their first show. And I'm like, that would be terrible. I couldn't think of anything worse. I just want strangers.
No, well, yeah.
When I'm out of the guns.
Which is,
you know,
same thing that happened to me, which is why I moved to LA. Because I grew up in D.C. and I was like, hey, if I go to New York, I had a girlfriend at the time. And I was like, I remember it's going to be easier for me to go to New York to D.C. because it's a 4-hour drive.
Yeah.
And he was just there. And also, I didn't want to start comedy in D.C. because also same thing. I already had like a social life there.
Right.
And I was like,
So
L.A. was like, that's, I was new. Advantage. Nobody knew me, who I was, and I met new people, and I just started doing it.
Yeah, come and die in front of strangers.
Of course. Yeah.
Instead, because then you just can leave.
Of course.
You can go, because I remember that feeling.
And what was your first show? Did you, your first gig? Was it in over there in Edinburgh?
Yeah, right. That's exactly how I did it. So there I was in Edinburgh. There was a comedy club called the Stand Comedy.
Have you ever
club.
Done stand up?
I had never done stand up.
Oh, okay. Had bits already written?
Nope. I knew that I always knew that I wanted to do it. I guess I think I did have some ideas in my head that I always had as a kid. I just, you know, just little things. I remember it used to be stuff about pop music, you know, helplines, calling help. Like just
got it.
Those first little observations.
Wait, didn't you did that last week?
And
that same bit? About help.
What's that?
I was like, didn't
about
you do
pop
that?
Music.
you keep doing that same bit now.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's one thing you learn straight out of the gate is that, oh right, we do the same thing every week. This gets even easier.
Oh yeah, because that's the thing that people think.
Yeah, people think comedians are like, they gotta have new stuff.
And that's gonna say, by the way, if you want to just make it easy to understand comics, it's the same thing as musicians. They play the same songs. They don't.
Yeah.
Every time they go up, they don't fucking learn a new song. They have a full song. Then an hour after they did their tour and whatever, they come up with new things.
Yeah. And you keep honing it down and you keep tagging it. And usually the way it works, too, is if you ever do record it for something, for a TV show or something, the next gig, you'll find a new tag for it.
Yeah.
Right? That you'll be blown away. You'll be like, why didn't – I've been doing this bit for a year now and I haven't thought of this tag. Yeah. And you always – the tag always comes to you the day after you've recorded it for posterity.
Because you let it go.
Yeah, 100%.
But so your first gig was there and it was good?
First gigs, yeah. Stand Comedy Club, it was called. And yeah, it was a great way. It's hard to explain this to people when they do ask me, like, where did you start? And I go, well, Scotland. And they're like, but you're not Scottish.
Yeah.
So there I was. It was really good. They had open mic, like an open mic night. But that wasn't, I find it weird here in America because I've noticed, I've never done them or anything, but you guys have bucket nights and stuff like that. And I say you guys, but you know. But in Britain, the way they do the open mics is they have a vibe of who the new comics are around,
mm-hmm.
and they'll take about 10 to 12 of them. You know, they'll cut it off. They won't. I mean, I've seen them do it at the Laugh Factory when the guy just walks out and go, all right, all 40 of you, put your names in this bucket. I'm like, oh, that's what a terrible way to try to develop yourself.
Yeah.
So the promoter at the Stand Comedy Club, so he kind of had his ear to the ground. And they had 12 spots every Monday night. If he had some favorites, he'd put them in. So there was usually the same 3 or 4 people, and then it was filled out with another 8.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, great, like great nurturing vibe to get into comedy and to not be intimidated.
Yeah,
you know, throw out that Canadian accent.
Yeah.
To the Scottish people and try to learn their lingo. You know, so it was comfortable for me to start. You know,
it was good. You did good.
Did good until my first death. Yeah. So my first death, which I found this interesting.
You say bomb, you mean? Bombing.
Yeah, I say death, but...
Okay, yeah. But I know this bomb... Is that how you do it in Europe?
I believe so.
Or that's just you?
I don't know. I think we call it dying. We call it dying.
Dying? But bombing is here. Like, you bomb. I bomb.
You guys 100% use
bombing.
Right. You never say I died?
No.
Right.
Because the thing is, like, when you say I killed... It means you did good. So how are you going to say, I kill and I die? It's the same shit.
No, it's different. You either kill or you die.
No, but it's kind of polar opposites. No, but it's in the same of death. So I don't think bombing. You use bomb.
You bomb.
I bomb.
Yeah, all right.
Or you bomb or yeah.
I love die because it just sounds more tragic.
Yeah, that's very Shakespeare. Yeah, like, I death.
I did, but yeah. So I've just never used the vernacular of bomb. Yeah. My first death in which yeah, I don't know how yours happened and everything, but it always it teaches you that lesson of like not to be too sure of yourself, you know, because that's when it arrived. That's my first death arrived. My first bomb arrived 8 gigs in.
Okay.
So I was only 8 gigs in.
Wait, so you did good the first 8 times?
First 7 times.
But what's good? Like, good or like you think was good, but it wasn't good? You know what I mean?
It was pretty good. Like, I did.
It's kind of like, it's like the first time you had sex is like, well, I was really doing weekends. Was it good?
Well, I got to do, I was doing weekends. So like, because open mics are Monday nights, you know? So I did like 2 Monday nights and then they put me straight onto a weekend.
Okay.
So I was quite lucky. I was pushed forward like kind of quickly. So I did these two. So a Monday night, and then I did like a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then probably a Thursday, and then boom, gig number 8 was on that Friday. I don't know why. I just ironically it wound up on my middle finger.
Yeah.
But that's basically what the gig did to me. So there it was. So it was like my second ever Friday, but I was cocky, you know, like the last weekend I did went well. And I was also learning about Scotland, and this is how I put a foot wrong, because here I was in front of a Scottish audience, I'm 8 gigs in, and we had a whole bunch of firefighters, and
firefighters.
Yeah, firefighters. There was like 3 tables of firefighters, and I had just been learning the vernacular.
In Scotland, doesn't it rain all the time?
I think everybody needs firefighters out there. But yeah, no, that's a good point.
I mean, it's like, do you really?
That would be great if you were a firefighter and a fire starts and you just kind of lean out the window and you're like,
that's fine. I don't need to go.
Yeah, they don't need us. They don't need us. I just had this cockiness. But I remember I had also used, like, I had also just learned a new word, which was cunt. You know, because when you come from North America.
Wait, that's not an American thing?
Well, it exists. Or
Canadian thing?
Well, it exists in North America, but it's the perception is very different in Britain. In Britain, they can use cunt all kinds of ways. It's not. It can be a compliment in Britain. Really?
You so, cunt?
Or, yeah, you could say, like you know, that? Like, you're a good cunt. You know, he's a good cunt. Ah, you cheeky cunt. So they use terms like that.
Okay, because here is very bad.
Well,
like in America.
Yeah, I think Americans haven't totally learned the multiple uses for it yet. You know, so it's tone and etc. Yeah. But anyway, but I basically made the dire mistake of using it on the firemen.
Uh-huh. What did you say?
I said, you bunch of cunts.
Oh, yeah, that's not good.
And they weren't happy. I might not have learned how to say it properly, but they were quickly up from the tables.
Oh, and they...
And, yeah.
About to fight you?
They wanted to fight me.
Oh, fuck.
So it got crazy. So they rushed the stage, and I kind of went to the back of the stage. I still have flashes of this in how, like, because I was, you know, I got the flop sweat on. I don't think I was doing well either. I think I had come up on stage all cocky from
it didn't work.
It wasn't working. Yeah. And a firefighter probably said, it ain't not working for you, mate, or something. I said, oh, shut up, you bunch of cunts, or whatever. And I'm like, oh, God, what's this kid doing? So they were all after me. And I still remember when I got to the backstage area, there was another comic there called Brian Hennigan, and he's now Doug Stanhope's manager.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Scottish guy. But so he was there, and I come backstage, and Hennigan just laughs straight at me. He just goes, "Ha ha! I heard that you were good." And he was just laughing. I was like, "Holy shit!" And now there's 2 doors. They're all coming for me, and this lovely lady Corey, who worked at the club, she came and grabbed me. And I don't know if it's irony or not, but she hid me on the fire escape.
Oh, that's outside.
So I was up on this ringed fire escape in the rain enough, because it is Scotland, in the rain, in this fire escape. I was up there for about an hour while these angry firefighters were looking for me.
Oh, but they wanted to beat you up.
Oh, yeah. They were screaming in the back streets. Like, where is... They were using the term cunt properly. And so that my first bomb was a hell of a bomb. Yeah, you know, man, it still didn't deter me, but when I, you know, when I got off the fire escape, I still kept
You still
going,
wanted to do it, which is weird. Wow. Yeah. That for me was it wasn't as bad. I didn't say cunt or anything like that.
You didn't necessarily put you just didn't vibe with them. People's first death is just didn't vibe.
For me was just actually like, I mean, I've been doing comedy, I think maybe like about after when I did that, like out a year. Because I started with me, like, started doing open mics when I moved to LA, you know, just doing open mics. And then I actually did my first, I would actually do shows in hostels, you know, like in here.
Is
like,
that
you
the
know.
Hollywood hostel?
There was one in by the Improv. Yeah. Remember, you know? I remember. And I used to, Chris D'Elia actually would do. You know, shows there too and whatever. You know, it was run by this guy, Matt Cimini. And it was funny. I would do those hostels. And I remember that wasn't one of my first... Because my first gig, I always say, like, it was, like, the one where I got, like I put my name in those little flyers or whatever, like, that bullshit thing. And, like, I felt like it was, like, a professional gig.
I've made it. It's the first time you get your name in print.
And he went,
And it's just this tiny thing.
And I had a friend come in and stuff like that, but not, you know, like a roommate or anything. But it went good. Yeah, and I, it felt, and then, but the hostel ones, I remember when I always remember is doing jokes that I was, that I'm like, oh, these jokes are so bad. That gave me confidence to go, like, if I can get these people to laugh at these jokes that I wrote so bad, then I'm good, then I'm doing something good. Because one of the jokes was like the why do the tea bag has instructions, you know, like it's always like take it off, put hot water, and like, and to me it's like that's like giving
these are the first kind of
jokes
that you do. I used to call comment lines and go, I have a comment, you know, tasty or whatever.
No, well, like, but that was a setup. The joke was like, that's like making, like putting instructions of a guy on how to make a guy happy. It's like, pull down his pants and suck his cock.
Right. Yeah.
That was the thing. But it was still bad, but it was like, but I was like,
it's all in the show.
Yeah. It's all in the thing, you know. But to me, I was like, I remember going like, man, if I can make, because I remember going like, this is not good. Like, but if I can make, if our people are laughing at this shit, then I'm like, but by my first bomb was actually, I was at this club in North Hollywood here in LA. And I went in and I remember going, it was like one of my first times there. And I went in and the lady put me in the show. I was just going to do 5 minutes and I went up. And it was crazy because as soon as I said something, it just died. Like, no, right. You didn't get any. It's one of those things where you're like, what's, like, even I could have been like, hello. And
you just feel the vacuum of it all.
And at that point, I think I was still, you know, I was still doing open mic. So, like, I didn't know how to handle it. And it kind of just went like, ooh, like, you know, when you're like, you start sweating and you're like, and I don't remember what I started saying. But I was going to do 5 minutes, and, like, at the second minute, the lady, I could see the light going, like, chaka, 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 chaka. You know, and I get out, and the whole thing that people understand is, like, comics are always very supportive with each other. I mean, in a way, you know, like.
We'll laugh it off.
We'll laugh on and off, you know. I mean, in terms of the show, I think, you know, like, with people, like, you know, like, relationships is another thing. But, like, in the shows, like. Because, like, if people, like, what I mean is, like, if you're in a club or whatever, a show, and you do good, the comics will come up to you, hey, man, good set, that was good, that was fun and that. But if you do bad, if you bomb, comics are never going to come to you like, wow, that suck. It's mostly they just don't fucking talk to you. It's like you got leprosy, you know what I mean? Like,
they and just that's let you stew in it.
Yeah, I remember going in, walking down the stairs, and then trying, and, like, looking at comics going, like, like, for just looking for somebody to go, like, that wasn't that bad, and nobody wanted to. And I remember, like, just basically just, like, I got to get out of here. So I walked to my car, and you start that feeling of, like, what the fuck am I doing?
Yeah.
And that was, like, the only, like, truly bomb that I had. Like, that was it. Like, right. And then
you don't get them every now and then? They don't
sneak
up on you?
No, because it's different. Because bombs now, like, I could say I had a bad set or a bad show, but I still... I can still do good. It's kind of like...
Right.
It's like...
go ahead.
No, it's kind of like being a basketball player and say, like, well, he had a bad game, but I still score some points. I still, you know, like that kind of thing. But like,
in there.
Yeah, but like, so I can still, so I, yeah, I mean, that never going to goes away. You're always going to have like good shows and bad shows, but truly bomb or like literally where like nobody laughs and it's like, you can hear a pin drop. Like,
yeah,
that was the only one that I had. And and then, but the great thing that I did, it was like the next day I went up and then I did good again.
Yeah.
And then that's it. And then you just keep going and you realize, oh, this is how it is. You're going to have bad. And sometimes it might be the crowd. Sometimes it might be the show. Sometimes you go like, fuck, you know, like you just didn't have it that day.
Yeah.
And, but you do, like I said, the more you do and the better you become, the more you realize it's like, it's to me, like the key of a good comic is being stability. Like knowing like again, going to basketball player, like knowing that, oh, that guy or that girl is always going to, you know, you can always count on that person to score, to play good. Sometimes, you know, and then obviously you want to be a LeBron type. Yeah. Or like you're always fucking.
Well, I was going to, like LeBron or like all the greatest basketball players or athletes, they never have two bad games in a row.
No,
really.
No.
Like, actually,
and their bad games are always good games.
But I feel that way about like dying on stage as well. I've never died on stage twice in a row.
No.
Kind of thing. Because it's the humbling part of the of bombing is the humbling part that makes you do good. The next time. All that cockiness goes away. Yes. And then you put on a show for people and you redeem yourself.
Even yesterday, I did a Zoom show. And and we went to the show that we did. I did a show at this dugout.
Yeah, that was fun.
And that was fun. I did good in that one.
And
I had that little cockiness. And then I did this show yesterday on Zoom.
Did you feel too cocky?
And it was like, I started sweating for some stuff. That I'm like, because I was doing all the obviously new shit. Yeah. And I was like, oh, well, that didn't work.
That's part of this season as well.
But you also know, like, I was blame. It was like, it's kind of like having sex, you know, like, in a point, like, you get to a point, like, you know how to do what. Like, I'm not a porn guy, but I know I can fuck good. You know, like,
yeah.
But, like, you know, and like, and then, all, and then if I get cocky, I might do a move that I'm like,
and then
it's like, well, no, it's like, you're not a porn guy. Keep sticking to your routine. I have my routine.
You have the direct feedback there. And she's
I have
like,
my routine.
I like the old stuff.
Yeah. Give me the old.
Give me some of that back catalog there.
Give me the tea. Can you do the tea bag thing again?
I'll tell you this. They're like, well done. If considering that you haven't felt that way for a while. I mean, I haven't felt that way for a while.
What?
Like, feel that bombing, that death of, like, that vacuum.
Well,
that
I think that to me, that's, I don't think for us, unless we purposely do it, because we're so.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Once you have some experience and you're dying, it's always your fault. It's always your fault. But you get enough experience as a comedian, where you're like, it's not fucking my fault. It's your fault. It's the audience's fault. And you confidently feel like you guys fucked it up. Yeah. I didn't.
But also, at this point, we can also adjust a lot.
Yeah.
Like if I do something, it doesn't hit right away, I will adjust. And you can have, like, that's what I'm saying. That's having good shows and bad shows. It's like, well, this show, I didn't connect with them at all. But you still got stuff in. Like, it wasn't complete bomb.
Because what I wanted to mention, though, is because the bombing season is coming up. The traditional bombing season. So I don't know if you found this one, but I find Christmas. The Christmas season is the hardest season to entertain people. I imagine Zoom gigs or whatever we have to do in COVID will be always different. But Christmas is always tough because Christmas is full of office parties.
Yes.
Who generally look at each other instead of the comedian.
Well, those shows
have to come out, and that creates the vacuum.
Yeah.
So they're very tough. So no comedian, no experienced comedian goes into Christmas season cocky.
Yeah.
And we all go in going, oh, God.
Well, and also at that point, I think there's also a difference, and then we can discuss this later because we have to head out. But I think corporate shows, Christmas shows, all those shows, those are much, much different than doing the club show, you know? So, like, those, because those you're getting, basically, you're, like, you're getting paid to entertain. You're a puppet in that point. So you got to stick to, you can't, like, we can't, you know, you can't say cunt, you know, in a corporate.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, so you got to, keep it very, like, you know what I mean? So,
yeah, entirely.
Thing. Yeah.
Yeah, completely, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is fun.
Yeah,
this
man.
It's been fun. I hope
it's
you guys,
our first one,
guys,
man. We did it.
First one.
We're not
I hope
virgins
you guys enjoyed
anymore.
Listening to us chat.
Yes.
Chatting about comedy. We have so much more that we, you
of
know,
course,
that we're gonna get to.
I mean, just and it's gonna be fun. Like, you know, we're gonna get guests and we're gonna discuss all this stuff.
Yeah, like we said at the top, we got ideas to get some great international guests and shine lights on all your questions and that, and we'll be able to interact with you as well.
Yeah, follow us and all the, you know, subscribe, follow,
click all that kind of
all
stuff.
Social media. And then obviously put comments, and if you will try to answer those questions.
Yeah, if you put down comments, then we can always answer them. And who knows? Who knows where this will grow? I mean, that's, you understand our angle now, that we want to try to get these comedians and entertainers. We can't wait to introduce you to some of these great artists from around the world.
So they can tell us about their stories.
And that's our gist. We thought our unique point will be that we'll try to ask them about their background and their beginning in the art form. And hopefully you guys will find that cool, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. So, so do your thing. Have a good time in the meantime. And
we're good.
Yeah. We'll see you in the next one.
Bye, Alu.